JC Corcoran Podcast.
I don't know. Times are changing, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Michelle Obama's doing an arena tour. That's another thing going on. I'm going to say that again. Michelle Obama is doing an arena tour. She's not playing comedy clubs. She's doing arenas. When did first ladies start acting like they got elected? You know? Dude, being a first lady, that's not a fucking job. Right? Look how quiet is it in here. Why is it so fucking quiet? You think that's a job? It's not a fucking job. Dude, if you really think it's a job, just look at her. Right? Look at Obama. When that guy got elected, he looked like he was about 41 years old. When he left office, that guy looked like he was about 73. Right? Look at Michelle. She looks younger now than she did when that dude got elected. What has she done for the last 8 years? Yeah, other than lay in a giant vat of Illuminati-level lotion, just sit there floating. She pops her head up. Hey, Bam Bam, tell Stevie Wonder to come down and play some songs tonight. Now, I found out she's doing a tour because she's doing a book tour. Yeah, she wrote a book. She wrote a book about not having a job. I gotta read that fucking book. Chapter 1, how to know if a dick tastes presidential. How to weed your way through all that local representative cock and get to the big swinging dick in the room.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023, 36 days until opening day. How are you doing, kids? You are jcontheline.com. I hope that Bill Burr isn't about to skate off the deep end. You know, I spotted him a long time ago and started talking about Bill Burr. I'm like, this is the funniest guy to arrive on the scene in an awfully long time. His material is really, really funny. His delivery makes the act. I mean, without that delivery, I don't think it would be as good. But and he's had staying power. I mean, he's been around for a while now, and the stuff just isn't getting any less funny. However, he's starting to get to, like I said, where he's got about 9 toes hanging off the edge, and I'm hoping that he doesn't go completely off the edge. There's a video he did with Bill Maher. I think it was that podcast thing, but there was video with it. And for about 10 minutes, these guys were really arguing to the level of where you're like stepping back on, this is starting to get serious. And then they sort of kissed and made up, and then they continued on with the podcast. But, you know, that's pretty edgy stuff right there. When I say edgy, for me, that's where I'm starting to get to the area where I'm starting to get mildly uncomfortable with this. But in the meantime, Bill Burr continues to rock. All right, depending on when you are listening to this today, severe storms moving through the St. Louis area, definitely a possibility. Now, I saw this yesterday. They said that if the overcast was a factor this morning, it might not allow the atmosphere to cook as much as was originally concerned. I mean, they really thought that there could be some tornadoes and stuff. And it's not that there won't be. It's just becoming more unlikely because the heat did not get an opportunity to really cook up that atmosphere. So as I'm looking at the radar right now, it looks like there's going to be storms and a lot of wind and a lot of rain and some hail and all that sort of stuff. But it doesn't, right now, it does not look severe, but we'll see. While all that's going on, oh, and by the way, the temperature go down and then up and then down and then up. It's amazing everybody's not in the hospital right now. While all this is going on, they're using the term historic snowfall totals in the upper Midwest, particularly in Minneapolis, where they changed it from 12 to 18 inches of snow expected from Minneapolis over to Green Bay. Now they're saying 15 to 25 inches of snow. And I guarantee you there's somebody sitting there on the internet up there in Minnesota going, I bet you we get nothing. That's what everybody says now. When there's a weather forecast in St. Louis for any snow, I bet we get nothing. And then, after all that goes through, later on today and tonight, they're talking about a major ice storm in the state of Michigan. Pretty much the whole central part of Michigan, from way over where Lake Michigan is all the way over to the other side of the state. They are talking about the possibility of 3/4 of an inch of ice all throughout central Michigan. 3/4 of an inch is almost as thick as the ice at the Scott Trade Center that the Blues skate on. Although everybody thinks that ice is about, you know, a foot thick. It's less than 2 inches. Sometimes it's just a little over an inch. So just imagine that on the roofs and on the cars and on the roads and sidewalks and all that. 3/4 of an inch will shut down the entire central part of Michigan, if that actually takes place. And that's supposed to be going on right now. We had a little excitement here today. I moved the podcast to the 11 a.m. time slot because I thought that by now I would be on the air every morning on the new radio station we've been talking about for what seems like forever. But that got delayed. So now, with the podcast not being published until 11 a.m., my mornings are free right now until the radio station starts up. And we had a little bit of excitement here today because the guy right across the street, we heard some noise, we heard some commotion, look out the window, and a guy's Cadillac SUV is on fire. And then the fire subsided real quickly, and then it was just smoke coming out of the engine. And the guy standing there does not have a cell phone. Looks to me to be about maybe 78, 79 years old. In good shape for that. Handsome guy, tall. He needs our phone to call AAA. He does that, but then he figures, well, I might as well go home because they said it could be a couple of hours. So he asks for a ride home. I'm like, yeah, I'm a good neighbor. Why not? I didn't even know if he was a neighbor. He told me where he lived, and it wasn't more than about 8 or 9 minutes away. So we're driving along, and I just mentioned to him, you know, like, where are you from originally? Because that's the big question down here. It's sort of like, where'd you go to high school in St. Louis? You live in Florida. Where are you from originally? And he was born in England and then lived in Canada for many, many years. But for like 35 years, was an ER doctor at a hospital in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is someplace I lived for 2 years back in the 1970s. And it is really getting interesting when you find yourself in the position I'm in. It's to the point now where, unless you're talking about the Great Plains, and I'm talking about the Dakotas and Montana and I don't even remember what else is. Oh, Idaho, Wyoming, places like that. Unless you're talking about that stretch of states that I've spent really no time in at all. If I run into somebody, there's a pretty good chance, there's about 80% chance, I'm going to be able to get into a conversation with you about either your city or at least somewhere in your region. Because, you know, I led a very sheltered childhood. Didn't go anywhere. We didn't have any money, so, you know, our vacations were, we'd drive about an hour and stay overnight in a Holiday Inn. And we were happy to have had that. I mean, I was really excited when my parents told me we were going to do that, because then you get a pool out of there. We didn't have any pools in our neighborhood. That's why I'm not able to swim today. But it was, you know, those were our vacations. That was a really, really big deal. Going to go get a hotel at Holiday Inn overnight. I heard Mary Lou Henner, who actually is also from Chicago, say the same thing once on Letterman about the vacation. Was you'd all pile in the car and you would drive, you know, like an hour outside of Chicago, and then you'd get a Holiday Inn and the kids would swim and that was your vacation. But then as soon as I hit like Washington, D.C., and then especially St. Louis back in 84, that's when I started doing all my traveling. And as Cindy Crawford once said, I thought it was an interesting quote, because she said, you know, you gain a degree of sophistication from travel, particularly if you're traveling to really, really nice places and really, really nice hotels. And in my case, yeah, it was all on the movie studio's dime. I mean, we were staying in 4- and 5-star hotels for the, what, 16 years that I was doing all those movie junkets. You come walking downstairs into the lobby, and there's, you know, Al Pacino walking through the lobby. You're staying in the same hotel. And with the radio station, and we were always picking out some place to go, like London, Abbey Road, or Moscow, when we did the week of shows from the former Soviet Union, all the spring training travel, all of the playoff action. You know, the Cardinals would go up against Arizona. You find yourself in Phoenix. That's how we saw San Francisco for the very first time. That's how we saw a lot of places. I say we, because for the most part, it was me and John Hewlett. And, you see all of this stuff after having led, you know, pretty sheltered existence for the first 20, 25 years of your life, where you didn't go anywhere, you didn't know anything. But having lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana back in the 70s, we got in a really nice conversation about Fort Wayne. And, the guy's obviously loaded. When I dropped him off at his house, he's got one of those houses right on the water of the Gulf of Mexico. And it's multi-story, and it was very, very nice. And he's driving a Cadillac. He obviously saved his money, and I did my good Samaritan work for today. So right now he's across the street dealing with the AAA people, and I hope before he leaves that, you know, maybe he walks over to our mailbox and, drops a bag of free syringes in or a vial of oxycodone. Thank you for your trouble. I don't even know where to go next. Guns N' Roses has announced a September date for St. Louis. Some of the tickets go on sale today. Busch Stadium, Saturday, September 9th is the date, and they will never get a dime out of me. First of all, I'm not that big a fan of that band. You know, Sweet Child of Mine is a great song for about the first 3 minutes, but the whole second half of the song is just, it's like Chicago feeling stronger every day. Feeling stronger every day, feeling stronger every day, feeling stronger. It's like, all right, I get the idea. You're feeling stronger every day. And Guns N' Roses is the same thing. Even Paradise City is like that. I'm just not a big fan of the band. But then you go back. I mean, come on. He's going around the country wearing a shirt that says St. Louis sucks. Why are we excited about, I don't know. I make a really good friend, and I'm really nice to everybody. I'm nice to you until you give me some reason not to be nice to you. Otherwise, I'm going to be nice to you. You fuck me over, and I will never forget it, and you'll never be treated the same again. So this is what I think of, and I think of Axl Rose. I guess you just don't get it. And I will also tell you that Steve Shankman and Irv Zuckerman, the guys who founded Contemporary Productions and started bringing concerts into St. Louis in the 70s, well, they built the Riverport Amphitheater as it was known back then. And, you know, that just, you know, that just completely changed the whole complexion of the St. Louis area concert scene by bringing that venue into the equation. And what was it open even? Was it even open a year when the destruction took place? I don't know. I mean, I think they sort of played it down a little bit, but I remember maybe it was on one of the anniversaries of the riot out there, and it was a riot, incidentally. You wouldn't believe the amount of damage that was done out there. I mean, they're pulling plants out of the ground and just busting chairs and doing all sorts of ridiculous damage out there, and Irv and Steve were pissed. Really pissed. I don't know. I'm still pissed. I'm not in the mood to be opening my arms and welcoming Axl Rose into St. Louis. But, you know, I think I'm in the minority. Wouldn't be the first time. I got some bad news. I think we're going to end up in a world war regardless of which path we choose. It's interesting because the poll yesterday that came out, the country split 50-50. I think it's 50-49. Regarding how do you feel about Joe Biden's treatment of Ukraine, the way he's handling that situation. And you just assume when you hear, you know, it's 50% against, that what that means is that the people who voted that way in the poll don't want so much involvement and don't want the military commitment and the especially the financial commitment to Ukraine. But somebody was quick to point out, oh, no, that's not what that means. There's as many people in that 50% that disapprove of the way Joe Biden's handling the Ukraine situation. What they're saying is, no, you're not doing enough. Help these people, which is easy to say. But then there's this guy by the name of Vladimir Putin over there. It just does seem like Vladimir is a pretty popular name, wouldn't you say? They're probably saying the same thing about Joe Biden. You know, everybody's named Joe in America. John. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. If you don't stop Putin, he's not going to stop where he is. He's going to continue to try to move further and further west. And if you do try to stop him, well, then you probably end up in a war. You're going to end up in a war with him either way. But in 2023, to have a world leader, a major world leader of a major country, flirting with the idea of World War III and nuclear activity, hard to believe. But it's also hard to believe what you're seeing coming out of Ukraine. If you turn the news on at all, well, the first thing you notice is the destruction. The second thing you notice is these people are like made out of cement. They are not moving. They do not believe that they're even capable of losing this war. They're sitting there building fires in the corner of a bombed out apartment building. A lot of them have no heat, no water, no, you know, no internet, none of that stuff. And Richard Engel, the NBC reporter, who is been covering this war for a long time, is in one of these apartments, and the lady is like, "Come on, have some borscht." He's like, "I don't want to eat your food. You guys are barely getting." She's like, "Sit down, have some borscht." I think this country was made of people just like that a long time ago. I don't think that's the case anymore. Power goes out for 2 hours in St. Louis, and people affected by it start seriously considering the possibility of cannibalism. I think that Morgan Freeman is really onto something. Morgan Freeman is onto something. I have the meme. I'm printing it today. I'm going to put it in a frame. I'm going to hang it above my computer so I can see it all day, every day. He said, "The key to happiness is to stay away from stupid people." And I'm really finding that's the case, because when I spend time on social media now, especially these science deniers, we're getting these amazing pictures back from the Hubble and from the James Webb telescopes that are out there. It's just an amazing display of technology that we're able to do stuff like this. And people just comment after hundreds of comments of people going, "Nice Photoshop," and these flat earthers. This is what it's come to. And the contrarians. I'm convinced that a lot of the stuff that you see there is just from people having a good time. College kids sitting up in a dorm at 3 o'clock in the morning, bored, and just deciding to pick fights with people who are, stating science on the internet. Well, let's fuck with them. Because it's either that, or then what you have to believe is that the American public, a good chunk of the American public, has become so stupid that the future really becomes called into question. Oh, and the other thing I've really become annoyed by is, you're having a discussion with somebody via the comment section. Somebody posts something. You take exception with it. You start to, have a friendly debate about something. And some asshole injects themselves into the conversation and starts calling one of the two sides names. Annie Fry, a conservative broadcaster in St. Louis. I take issue with a lot of stuff that she says and does, but I like her. And I have to confess that probably one of the reasons I still like her, even though I disagree with pretty much everything she says, is because for two reasons. Number one, you can have a reasonable argument with her without it descending into name-calling within the first 15 seconds. That's number one. Number two, I don't know what it is, but I just think she's so fucking cute. She's so cute. So we're having this little, tit-for-tat thing on the internet last night. And, of course, some asshole jams himself in there and starts calling me names. First of all, that's got to stop. Because when you disagree with somebody, disagree with them. And just because you disagree with them doesn't mean that that gives you carte blanche just to start hurling all sorts of, I'll give you another example. I'm having problems with women lately because I've taken some positions that are not anti-women at all. Matter of fact, I'm so fucking pro-women, it drives most people crazy. And I have three daughters, and I would like for them to have opportunities in life that are at the absolute minimum equal to the availabilities of men. But the problem right now with, it's that maybe that 20-30% of any group, it could be anything from Black Lives Matter all the way over to women's issues, all the way over to Trump, all the way over to Biden, all the way just spanning sports, movies, everything. I disagree with you. Therefore, I think you should lose your job, and I would like your head on a stick in my front yard. That's the stuff that's got to stop. And with Annie, you can have an argument with her. But this guy, you know, gets in there and sticks his big Budinsky in. And I'm like, hey, hey, in the words of Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction, I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing. So he sends back, in the words of Jack Nicholson, you can't handle the truth. And so I ended the discussion by saying, in the words of J.C. Corcoran, fuck off. We now know that Fox News, the hosts over there, were lying, that they knew all along. This isn't my opinion. It's not my opinion. This is sworn transcript. These are the texts and the other messages that people were sending back and forth to and from one another over in Fox News. Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, Tucker. They're on TV going, oh, the election was stolen, blah, blah, blah. And then you see the texts between and among these guys, and they're like, these people are fucking crazy. Oh, I gotta go. Commercial's over. The election was stolen, you know. And we know now it's all been bullshit. If I was a Fox News follower, I think I'd be sort of pissed off right now. But somehow, even with this revelation, it doesn't seem to be changing anybody's opinion. How can that be? It's like the end of Perry Mason when the guy says, he didn't kill the guy, I killed the guy. Well, Perry Mason still doesn't keep going after the original guy because the new information has been revealed and we know that what we once believed isn't true anymore. So how can this be? Don Lemon and the situation over at CNN apparently revealing the fact that they're having all sorts of internal problems. The guy, Jeff Zucker was the guy running the place. He was the guy who used to run the Today Show and the little chubby bald guy with glasses and he's boinking some subordinate over there at CNN. They find out about it. He has to resign. They bring in the former producer for Stephen Colbert. And they're like, look, how'd you like to go from a producer to a president of a news network? And he's like, I'm not fucking stupid. Mama didn't raise no fool. So he signs on the dotted line and he's running CNN. But they're having like an internal insurrection in there because you still have a lot of people who are loyal to Jeffrey Zucker, who's gone now. And a lot of people are siding with this Chris Licht guy. And the two sides apparently are not getting along. Then Don Lemon makes the stupidest comment ever. Although, as I said the other day, keep in mind that Don Lemon is a gay man who admitted that he had to Google what the prime of a woman is. And according to Google, and this is what he said, according to Google, it's 20s and 30s and to some extent 40s. And Nikki Haley is 51. And so he said, you know, you're not in your prime. Well, technically what he said was not untrue. He said that when I Googled it, this is what it said. But you still can't go on a major news network flanked by two women and say that. You probably shouldn't even think that. Even if in some people's world it's true, you're not going to get anywhere saying something like that on a national news network. And so now it turns out that Don Lemon hasn't been happy for a while, and this has exacerbated the situation, and people are wondering now if he's going to leave, and oh my God. And it turns out that David Letterman came this close to buying Twitter. You know, Dave's been making $30 million a year just from the TV show, just from his show. He was making $30 million a year, and then he's got all these production companies and side gigs. Yeah, his company was the one that put on Everybody Loves Raymond, and that show obviously did gangbusters. You got to remember that. You stay on the air for 5 years, then you get into syndication. And then when you get into syndication, then you just start making money faster than you can even count it. Just hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars for something like Everybody Loves Raymond. So you start adding all that up. Dave was on the air for, what, 32 years, 33 years. And he was just collecting all of that money for the majority of that time. And he's, you know, money likes money. So he's got a lot of rich friends. And apparently they were this close. They offered $33 billion to buy Twitter. And they needed Billy Crystal's money to complete the deal, and they couldn't find Billy Crystal. And in that period of several hours, Elon Musk swooped in, made the purchase, and that was that. But Letterman's group was this close to owning Twitter. 85-year-old woman walking her dog along a pond in Fort Pierce, Florida, day before yesterday. Alligator jumps out, grabs her. Dog got away, by the way. There have been 8 of these cases in 10 years, so not quite one a year. And they're warning everybody, don't walk your dog too close to the water. Something I did not know, alligators can completely conceal themselves in 1 foot of water. That's all they need. Scared to death. I saw my first alligator. Now, you can go to the little alligator farms, and there's a miniature golf course down the road here a bit, right across from the Phillies training camp, which is an unbelievable facility, by the way. But they got one of those things where you go and you can pet an alligator. Well, they got duct tape all over the alligator's jaw, so it's no problem. But I'm talking about a wild alligator. First time about a year and a half ago I saw one, and it was watching me. It was watching me. And the closer I came to the water, the closer it came to me. And finally, I was like, you know what? I think that's as close as I want to get to this guy. And I backed off. They're just menacing-looking creatures, just absolutely menacing. And the fact that what they do is, you know, they grab you, and then they pull you into the water and drown you. The fact that they know that they can pull you into that you can't swim. How do fucking alligators know that we can't breathe underwater? How do they know that? And then they do that, what do they call it, the death spin, the death roll, whatever it is. It just starts spinning. And you're underwater going, you know, and then by then you're dead. More foreign Russian officials falling out of buildings. There was a radio station I was listening to this morning, and they were reading the entire list. It's like 15 former Russian officials who have fallen out of tall buildings just in the last year. And then one, and they list them all as suicides. And there was one guy who was shot in the chest, and he died, and they listed that as a suicide. But then people started to ask questions when they saw that he was shot in the chest 5 times. That's either unprecedented determination, or he got shot at by somebody else 5 times. After the first 3 shots to the chest, I think you'd say, you know what, I think my work is done here. Just list, write that down as a suicide. Oh, this thing from last night. Oh, my God. Obviously, it was published as a joke. Where is this thing? Ryan O'Reilly with a hat trick last night, by the way. Here we go. This is from a New Jersey newspaper. Yeah, New Jersey and New York. And all it says is 1950s. It doesn't say the actual year, but it says 1950s. And the headline is one of those things where they stop man on the street and they ask him a question, and then they write down what they say. And in this particular case, the question was, if a woman needs it, should she be spanked? And there are 3 male responses here. Miguel Mateos from Brooklyn says, why not? If they don't know how to behave by the time they're adults, they should be treated like children and spanked. That ought to make them grow up in a hurry. If it doesn't at first, they'll soon get the idea. All right, here's another guy. This guy is a barber from Brooklyn, Frank Desiderio. Yes, when they deserve it. As a barber, I've got a lot of faith in the hairbrush. I think there are certain cases when it's advisable. When it is, there's no reason why you shouldn't go right ahead and do it. I can't knock the idea. And Teddy Galei is a parking lot attendant. Should a woman be spanked if she needs to be? Teddy says, you bet. It teaches them who's boss. A lot of women tend to forget this is a man's world. And a lot of men who step down as boss of a family wish they hadn't. Spanking might help get back some of the respect they lost. So for the women listeners of the podcast, if you're ever sitting there thinking we really haven't come that far, yes you have. All right, I'm out of time here today. My fault. I got ranting on something else, but I made my first trip over to the Villages just outside of Orlando, Florida the other day, And I've got a lot of stuff to tell you about that. But like I said, we're out of time here. So I promise I'll do it tomorrow because I want to be able to do justice to it. All right. Congratulations to our former producer, Judy Martin, who today celebrates her 20th wedding anniversary. Steve, I'm so sorry. No, congratulations to you guys. My then 11-year-old daughter, Addison, made her debut at, she saw her very first rock and roll concert. It was at the pageant on this date. It was that Beatles group, 1964. And we went backstage, had our pictures taken and everything. It was very, very cool. It was on this date in 1985 that I was invited to go on Channel 9 to promote the Leave It to Beaver episodes that they were running at, I think it was 6:30 every night back in 1985. And I got a boombox and I did a thing called Rappin' Beaver. And it was a while before I was invited back. Let's just put it that way. What else we got? Oh, and the United States Olympic win over the Ruskies. The 1980 Olympics in hockey happened on this day. Do you believe in miracles? Yes. Al Michaels, the secret to happiness is to stay away from stupid people. Man, oh man, Morgan, thank you very much for that one. And finally, they say scientists have designed a rocket that can travel to Mars in 45 days. Sadly, it's going to be operated by Southwest, so your luggage is going to end up on Neptune. And with that, the Jason Corcoran podcast for Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023, is in the can. 36 days until opening day. We're here every weekday morning at 11. Still nothing new on the new radio station. I'll let you know as soon as it happens. I'm in the three-point stance. I'm waiting for the gun to fire. We'll be ready. We'll tell you all about it as soon as it's all official and the 101.5 signal in St. Louis is turned on. It still has not been turned on. It will. As soon as we're ready to rock here, we will let you know. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.